What's that? It's a storm of spoilers.
By virtue of the authority vested in me, I do hereby call to order the 103rd meeting of the Batman Mystery Club.
On this episode, we've been inspired by the success of Lego Batman to discuss the Caped Crusader and his cinematic presence. We start with some Batman news, move into a discussion of Lego Batman, then each host rates their favorite Batman before all three pitch Dreamcast Batman movies. The red phone is ringing, folks. It's Batman time. Hello and welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez and I am the Knight.
My name is Joanna Robinson and I am Vengeance.
And I'm Neil Miller and I am not the hero that this podcast needs right now, but I might be the one it deserves.
Oh, I have no doubt about that, Neil, that we deserve whatever you're going to give us this episode. We, of course, are back for a very special episode about Batman.
Emergency pod. That's what I'm calling it. There's been a lot of Batman news this week, so I think we could, we need to talk about Batman.
Yeah, I think there's a certain, you know, pitch to things like superhero news and Star Wars news where you got to put the brakes on and acknowledge that maybe talking about dragons can't be the only thing you do in 1 week. I just think it's a good policy.
Though I have to say, the number of people who tweeted at me that they too enjoyed the Enchanted Forest Chronicles and Hero in the Crown.
Very overwhelming response already.
Warmed my dragon heart. Like, there's a bunch of nerd ass people who read the same nerd ass books I did growing up who listen to this podcast. So thank you, my people, for letting me know you're out there.
Speaking of how they could let us know that they are out there, Joanna, do we have a new review for this week?
That was like your smoothest transition ever. That was
Really bad on the show with
on
transitions.
Like beautiful bat wings you flew from one topic to the next. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I will say, I mean, this is the second episode in 1 week, so we don't have a ton of new reviews. But I will read a slightly old one. By that, I mean we have no new reviews since last I read one. But I'll read a slightly old one that I skipped past, which is from KP Stark. Not a bad name. 5 stars, one of the best. This review is massively overdue. I've been listening for several months now since Game of Thrones season 6, and it's become one of my absolute favorites. I look forward to each episode every week, even when the off-season tour visits something I have no intention of ever watching. I came for the great Game of Thrones analysis and theories and stayed for 3 lovely hosts and their fantastic pop culture conversations. The recent episode, Romancing the Storm, was absolutely charming. Do yourself a favor and download this podcast right now! Exclamation mark. Really hope I didn't read that review before. I don't think so. So thank you, KP Stark. You're now my favorite Stark. Sorry, Ned. And yeah, leave us a review on iTunes. 5 stars and say whatever you want is Dave's usual policy. So go to.
Yeah, that's a policy. I like it. Meanwhile, Joanna, come over with me as I lift up this bus head and press this red button, and we'll slide down to meet Neil in our little bat cave. No. Neil, what's up with news this week?
Well, we're going to skip over all of our normal news because we covered most of the non-Batman stuff in the earlier episode. But I do have a couple things to remind people because I do it all the time. One is our very recently announced live show at South by Southwest, which is coming up in the second week of March here on Sunday, March 12th. We will be doing a live podcast from South by Southwest. They're having a podcast stage for the first time. It's going to be at 12:30 p.m. on Sunday. It's going to be in the Brazos Room at the JW Marriott, and we have been getting some questions from folks who are potentially in the area, I guess, about whether or not there will be tickets available. The answer, as far as I can find so far, is no. It is only open to South by Southwest badge holders. So hopefully you have the South By badge and you can come see us. If not, we will, of course, be recording the live show and putting it into your feeds so that you can listen to it and feel like you were there anyway. All right.
Feel like you were at South By Southwest at the first ever podcast stage.
Yes. Yes.
On this feed.
Because that's where we'll
be. It's like a taking a trip without having to fly anywhere.
Exactly. It's a lot cheaper than what Dave and Joanna have to do to get here. So the other thing is to remind you to make sure you fill out our survey, wondery.com/survey. As we explained in the last episode, it is not a particularly short survey, but it's well worth your time if you want to help us out. Also, you will find some of the content of the survey to be very dude-centric. And if you're not a dude person, there is a spot in that survey for you to tell them that you're not a dude person and that you want more non-dude stuff in the ads because, you know, that's how they find out. All right, so we have two pieces of news before we talk about Lego Batman, which we do want to talk about because I think we have a disagreement about Lego Batman, but two pieces of news dropped this week, very close to when we were recording this, that was not expected. One is that Matt Reeves, the director of the War for the Planet of the Apes and the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and he also did Cloverfield, he is now officially signed on to direct The Batman, which is apparently still starring Ben Affleck. And this is after he was rumored to be signed on, and then he was rumored to be leaving the project. And so what do we know about this, and what do you feel about this?
Well, here's I'm just going to jump right in and say this. You know, friend of the show, my boss, Kitty Rich, is the one who broke the news to – I mean, this was rumored, but she broke the news to me this afternoon. And she's like, Matt Reeves directing Batman! Exclamation mark. This took up place over chat. Don't worry, I won't read the whole transcript. And basically my response was like, boo, they keep throwing good talent after bad. Like, I think Matt Reeves is really talented, but for me, and I know some listeners won't like this, but for me, the DCEU has burned me so many times that until they show me a good movie, I cannot muster, like, fool me once, shame on, you know, like, I can't muster excitement, for anything they have done. Like, not, and, you know, and then Katie was like, she's like, well, I can't actively root against Wonder Woman. I really want it to do well. And like, I don't consider myself actively rooting against anything other than probably Zack Snyder to fail forever. But, like,
just to fail at Justice League. I feel like he could do another Flying Owl movie, and we've talked about this.
Sure, Flying Owls is fine. stick to the Flying Owls. Leave the bat alone. But like, she's right about Wonder Woman. I can only be just like kind of neutral on Wonder Woman because I don't have any evidence that it's good, except I do like the trailer. I'm very, very skeptical and worried about it. And so I will just go in with like in neutral and see what happens. And if it's good, then maybe like hope will stir in my chest once again for the DCEU. And I can look forward to what Matt Reeves might do with a reluctant Ben Affleck playing Batman. We'll see. But those are my thoughts. Like, does that make sense that like I would feel like a hollowed shell of a human when thinking about the DCEU at this point?
Yes, I think you share that opinion with a couple different people. This is also funny just out of the general historical context of people trying to reboot the Batman movie universe. This tango always happens. Ever since Tim Burton wasn't going to do a third one, there's like this shuffle, and then they decide, you know, maybe we're going to go in a different direction, and then someone brings up Darren Aronofsky every time, and then someone has to be like, well, no. And then, yeah, so now we're in the shuffle. We have Matt Reeves for a little while until it starts production, which I think it needs to during this summer in order to make its release date. Then we'll know for sure he's locked in. But I don't know. I'm happy that at least it looks like he got to finish his Apes trilogy the way he wanted to before he had to jump onto this. It would be nice to see him do something a little more original or something that he really wanted to do, but I have no evidence of Matt Reeves not liking the Batman, so maybe this is the movie that we need. Maybe not the one we deserve.
Well, and those are all excellent points. I think what I am wondering in this whole situation is, and I do think it's interesting, Dave, how you mentioned the constant dance that has been going on since the late 80s of Batman. What we should never lose sight of is that they are always in the process of some part of the process of making a Batman movie. Like, Batman is, yeah. And I think that's one of the things that makes him special. I think only Spider-Man is in this category where it's like they're always trying to, they're at all times trying to develop a new version of this. So there will never not be a Batman movie coming. So, that said, with Matt Reeves, I do find it very interesting that he sort of backed away. A lot of people said he was backing away for creative reasons, and then now he is officially signed on. So what you wonder is what closed that gap? Did Warner Brothers sort of acquiesce to the creative stuff that he wanted, which is, I would say, probably a good sign for the film, because Warner Brothers making films by committee has not really worked in a number of ways. And when they give filmmakers control of their Batman, good filmmakers control of their Batman movies, we get Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy and not Zack Snyder's whatever that was. And or is it just that they just offered him a lot more money because Batman is infinite budget? If it's the latter, I think that Matt Reeves might be making the wrong decision. If it's the former, maybe this is salvageable. And I am,
the former is what needed, what is what needs to break at Warner Brothers, is they need to stop thinking that they could interfere and just do what they said they were going to do, which is make a director driven franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let a director have the Flash and just commit to that movie coming out. Like, you're already committing to like two more Zack Snyder movies just coming out, and then let it see how it goes. I feel like every time they get like a little nervous, like when they see a cut and it's not, you know, four quadrant grimdark, which doesn't exist, then they're like, well, what can we do to save this? That I feel like when Matt Reeves exited the project, the feeling I got was that if you can't keep Ben Affleck and you can't keep Matt Reeves, then somebody's trying to like muscle a workman in there, and they keep shooting for actual artists. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. It could be a dump truck full of money, but I'm hoping that it's Warner Brothers breaking and just being like,
the
it's not good
example,
PR to lose good directors.
The perfect example of how this goes wrong is Suicide Squad. Like,
yeah.
End of story.
Yeah.
So there's that. Okay, cool. So the other piece of Batman news, which I find deeply fascinating, which is that the director of the now very successful Lego Batman movie, Chris McKay, is in talks to direct a Nightwing standalone film, live action, not Lego, unfortunately. but there's a lot of that I find interesting about this. One, Chris McKay, at least to my knowledge, has not made a live action movie yet. So that,
I don't think so. He's one of the robot chicken people, right?
I think so, yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about taking a director to his directorial debut is basically doing a Batman franchise film. Cool. No pressure. and also the idea of adding Nightwing to the DCEU or being DCEU adjacent, which I think is something that a lot of Batman fans, and we're going to get to this when we do our dream casting, a lot of Batman fans on this podcast would love to see a Nightwing movie.
Uh-huh.
Just the problem is, I don't know what that, like, and this sort of transitions us into Lego Batman, because I really liked Lego Batman, and I feel like Lego Batman was the first movie to sort of embrace the Bat family as anything. So maybe this is a good thing.
Is that what you liked about Lego Batman? What
it's
did you like about Lego Batman?
It's part
so
of
what I know exactly what the targets I'm shooting at.
well, yeah, he has his batarang ready. Well, I think a lot of us were hoping, right, that there might be a Nightwing spinoff when Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character sort of ended, and The Dark Knight Rises, entering the Batcave, Bruce Wayne has retired from crime fighting. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is revealed to be a Robin figure. And so a lot of people, when they saw him in that shot, they were like, Nightwing, is it happening? Is it coming? And then no, it's not. So it's hard. Like I didn't believe it was coming, but I got kind of attached to the idea of Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Nightwing. I kind of really like it. So it's hard for me, without like really good casting behind it, to get excited about a different concept. What do you guys think?
I think now's the perfect time to do Nightwing, because in terms of the comic books, they've really expanded, both the Robin's Nightwing, the character himself, and what it means to be like a Batman sidekick, to the point that I really just think you just do a greatest hits. And what the benefit of a Nightwing spinoff movie would have is that we haven't had like a cinematic Robin that's stuck. So you have the capability to bring Dick Grayson to screen in a way that you don't have to deal with like the goofy parts of being Robin, or having Batman in a situation where he needs a Robin, which none of the cinematic Batmans have really been able to emotionally justify. Sorry, Val Kilmer. But like, I feel like if you could just jump over that and have some key moments to show us his relationship to the Batman mythos, but otherwise investigate, you know, Dick Grayson, genius crime fighter. I guess he would be like a post-teen, 20-something. I'm into it.
What do you think, Neil? You want it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to explain why in a later segment.
Okay.
But
I swiped us back following Joanna's lead from Lego Batman, but you were talking about liking Lego Batman, and I was interested in that.
Yeah.
Because I did not like Lego Batman.
And I'm curious about this. There's one more thing I wanted to say, because you brought up Joseph Gordon-Levitt. One of the things that I saw on Twitter today, after I tweeted this news out, was there's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of jumping on the whatever's fresh in mainstream mass consumption pop culture. So everybody's like, man, Adam Driver as Nightwing. And I'm like, yeah, that's okay, but like, let's be more creative here.
No.
So
I don't want that for Adam Driver. Like, I was kind of upset that Adam Driver's doing Snickers commercials. Like, Star Wars is one thing, but I need Adam Driver to stay weirder than he's been staying. So,
right. And as I'm going to explain in a later segment of this episode, they'll never make the weird Nightwing, even though I'm going to pitch you one. Okay.
I want to mention one more Bat property before we get to Lego Batman, which is this really cool documentary called Batman and Bill that Hulu is putting out in May. And it's about Bill Finger, who is the uncredited co-creator of Batman, like for years. Bob Kane, who was like his co-worker, sort of like took credit for Bob Kane was considered the father of Batman. And then it turns out that this guy, Bill Finger, was actually the guy who created Batman and really wrote the most iconic things that we know about Batman, being like the Joker and Catwoman and all this sort of stuff, and didn't get any credit. So this is a documentary, by Mark Tyler Nobleman, who like becomes obsessed with finding out everything about Bill Finger and how he was robbed of credit and all this sort of stuff. So that's going to be on Hulu in May, and I think it's going to be really fascinating. I saw a panel about it at the TCAs with his granddaughter, who like then got embroiled in a legal battle to get like the royalties of all the Bat merchandise to her family. So it's very fascinating little nugget of comic book history. So, and this is like, this is nothing new in comic book, right? Like, comic book creators and artists and writers are forever getting sort of like left out of the profits of the stories that they've created.
I wouldn't say
not
much
forever
anymore, but definitely for like the first 60 years,
right,
it was transitioning out of the publishing industry,
right,
which had different laws and shit.
Different copyright sort of thing. So yeah, not forever, but like, I feel like I've read a couple stories of like so-and-so created X and they lived their lives penniless. So anyway.
That's how you know you're a true artist, though.
I guess so.
That's how I know that I'm a true artist.
I guess that's it. All right, that's all I have to say about that.
All right, let's talk Lego Batman, because I think I don't understand why someone wouldn't like this movie. So you guys are going to have to explain it to me, mostly because I found it to be charming and goofy, just like the Lego movie. And I found it to be delightfully self-referential to the other Batman properties in a similar way to the irreverence of like Deadpool toward the X-Men, which I thought was a lot of fun. And I thought that it's told a very sort of interesting Batman story, and it of the loneliness of that is being Batman, and Batman needs friends, and it's a kid's movie. So I don't know. It's extremely simple when you really break it down, but it's also, I think, a lot of fun.
This is great because the subtext of what Neil is saying is like, Joanna and Dave, what's wrong with you? How are you broken inside that you don't like this movie?
How when it's so great on every about level. Being together. Yeah.
It's just it's really sweetness and light, Batman guys. Jokes. What the hell's wrong with you?
But that's what's
confusing.
But
the tables will be turned when we get to our X-Men episode coming up. So I look forward to that, to saying what's wrong with
you. So I guess my question is, what's wrong with Lego Batman?
Well, you already know my answer. I mean, like, we knew I wasn't going to like this movie because I don't like Will Arnett, and I can't handle Will Arnett in large doses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can see that.
And I liked him in like the small doses of the original Lego movie, but a whole movie centered on Will Arnett's Lego Batman is not something I was ever going to like. So I did go to see it. Sure, some parts were funny, but that's my problem. That's my bias that I have been very forthright about. You guys know this about me. So I'm not going to try to like really justify my hate. It's an irrational hatred. Dave.
Number one, it's ugly as balls. The Lego movie was nice because it was about whether or not you're supposed to build based on the instructions, and it had a whole not Lego part where it justified its point of view. This has Clayface with corners, which really pisses me off. It sets Gotham as having always been Lego, which really pisses me off. And then it introduces new bat vehicles that we've only seen in Lego, and they fly by us while tons of other Lego explosion shit, which can't be textured to be visually registered correctly. It's like looking at a whole bunch of different colored beans that have been suspended in midair. Really, really bothers me. And especially because the plot never winks to why it is. If this was the Batman from the Lego movie that was living in a Lego world that was, you know, maybe inspired by you, the viewer, that something corny like that, that'd be fine. But them presenting that there's always been like a Lego Gotham and that that's where Billy Dee Williams got to be Two-Face really pissed me off. And then to like, the first act is good, but then to have the emotional like hook of the first part be that like the Batman won't acknowledge his dichotomy with the Joker just like rings false. So then you're making a pop culture movie that has Batman at its center, but you're not making a Batman movie because without that, like, it's an artificial darkness that requires him to lean on the family, whereas the character requires a real darkness to show him that he doesn't need to do things alone. And then at the end, it just becomes like pop culture, every Warner Brothers property joke we could throw in right at the end. And my final point is that I don't have a problem with children's movies that are made to push product. What I do have a problem with is fusing a product with a licensed property. So it's like you could have, I don't know, Lego Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a cartoon Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but this presents a Lego Batman that needs to exist in Lego form. So it's not like we're going to get like Lego Batman 2, Lego Batman 3, Lego Batman Netflix specials, Lego Batman the game. And it's going to start building on this own internal mythology, just like the Ninjago, but with a licensed property. And it's fusing with Batman in a way that I find like offensive, in the sense that you can't un-Lego Lego Batman. Like it would make no sense. And that's too much of fusing with the product. Like even with My Little Pony, if you want to revisit it every 20 years and redesign it and, you know, have the characters have different powers but still be based on original design, that's all design based. That seems fine. That's not Batman needs to have six blocks that make his seats that fits in. I hated it. I hated Lego Batman by the time it was over.
So there you go.
I will say this. There are a couple of what I would agree with, criticisms I would agree with in there. One is that it doesn't have the sort of suspension of dimensional belief, which I almost thought it would, like, was almost about to when they were talking about, like, how Gotham was, like, set up on a table and was, if the bomb went off, like, it was going to split. I was like, oh, so it's just like the first Lego movie where it's, like, it's a table. But so not having that, I do think relegates it to just a bigger budget version of all these straight to DVD Lego movies, because there's a million of these Lego movies that have come out. So I do think that there is that. So if you're expecting that, or if you had hoped for that, then you're not going to get that. The other stuff, I guess your criticisms of it as a sort of bastardization of the Batman, fusing it with Lego, that's valid. I just don't care about that as much, I guess. Like, I'll
you are not a true Batman fan. Everybody assault this man on Twitter.
See, this is why we can't have nice things. no, it's just, I guess, like, I'll take Lego whatever. I think they're fun. They're goofy. But I do think it's very possible that the Ninjago movie will be better than the Lego Batman movie. What is Ninjago? It's Lego stuff.
I was informed yesterday by the parent of a 4-year-old that Ninjago has an extensive continuity that is ripped almost directly from Power Rangers.
Great. I'm trying to think. Are there other properties you think that you would not want them to do Lego versions of?
Well, I mean,
like, specifically, is it?
I have the same problem with the Lego Star Wars universe, which is separate from the Star Wars universe to the point where they have this whole, like, television series about a building family that junks things. I mean, that's the same problem. I don't have a problem with Lego doing their spin on a license. What I have a problem with is anchoring it and not making it its own thing. The Lego movie's great because it embraces what it is thematically and wholly. I feel like this is just a, you know, I would have been much more accepting of it if it would have been, you know, like a long Netflix special or a 3-part weekend Disney XD series or something. Well, that wouldn't make sense, but, you know, something like that. I would have been accepting of that, but, like, putting it and positioning it like the way we would talk about it, like as a normal superhero movie, when I finally saw it, really rubbed me the wrong way.
Do you feel like if it at some point in, like, the third act would have pulled back and it was like a little kid and he had all the old Batman movie posters on his wall? Like, do you feel like that would have made more sense? Because to me it felt like it was, if a kid who had seen all the Batman movies was playing around with his Batman Legos, that's kind of the story one might make up. But they never approached that.
Even if there was, like, the post-credit scene was just, like, a wide shot of the Gotham table, like, I would accept that just fine. But it doesn't do anything like that. As a matter of fact, it doubles down. So the climax of the movie involves them being both stackable, which they are as toys, and having abs, which they wouldn't as toys. And that's cognitive dissonance, and I didn't like it.
Okay. Lego Batman doesn't have abs.
Well, I mean, he does, and then they make a big deal out of it, but, like, they're not actual muscles. Like, either you're a Lego or you're not a Lego. Either Gotham is Gotham or it's on a table. The movie doesn't take a side, and it might be a weird thing to, you know, ding a children's movie for. You're right in that sense. I'm sure there's lots of kids 12 and under who this is going to be perfect for them. But as a Batman movie on this podcast about Batman movies, 2 thumbs down from Dave.
All right. Okay. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to combat that. I just had more fun with it. Like, it felt like playing with toys, and that's fine. That's fine, too.
Just turn your brain off. Suicide Squad Extended Edition is better.
That's my secret, Dave. My brain's always off. All right. We should not belabor this disagreement any longer, and we should move on to stuff that we can disagree with in other ways.
Oh, let's.
All right. Now it is time.
Yeah, do it.
to rank the Batman.
Yeah.
Because we have two big ones, two big segments here. And one is we're going to rank the different Batmen, and then we're going to talk about our dream casted Batman movies. So how should we do this? I guess we could go from the bottom.
I think we could all just run through it. Because we should run through it
and defend, well, the difference, best and worst.
Okay.
Or like you can call, how about this? Here's the rules. We're going to run through it worst to best. And then someone, each of us has like one challenge we can throw up and be like, defend this particular spot on your ranking.
I like that. That's structure.
Okay.
Yep. Sounds great. All right. Joanna, you're first. Yeah.
Okay. So at the bottom I have George Clooney, which is not going to be an unpopular opinion.
Poor George.
That's my number nine. We all have like different numbers of Batman. Okay, that's my number nine. My number eight is Will Arnett for the reasons that I mentioned already. Number seven is Val Kilmer. Number seven is Val Kilmer. Number six is Bruce Greenwood, who is the voice of Batman on Young Justice, which is a great animated series if you haven't watched it.
I would like to hear more about that one, Pat Sajak.
All right. Have you watched Young Justice?
I have watched Young Justice. I would just like you to specify that because it did not make my list in terms of voice acted Batman.
Yeah, I didn't even know about this until...
Yeah, so Young Justice is like, you know, it's a number of like the sidekicks, like Robin and Superboy and all this sort of stuff. And they're like, they're learning how to fight crime. They're their own like little Avengers team, and they're learning how to fight crime. And occasionally they interact with, you know, their older counterpart. And, you know, who are aware that this team is trying to form and trying to do their own, learn and be a super fighting team. And so they just come off sort of as like beleaguered dads and moms. And it's kind of awesome for Bruce Wayne Batman to be just sort of generally disapproving. And Bruce Greenwood, who's a great actor, I think did a really good job with that role. Robin sort of like, I would say, along with Superboy, like the lead of Young Justice. And so the Batman disapproval is high because they're constantly doing more than they're supposed to do. They're constantly like overextending themselves and needing to be put like sort of smacked back in place by their, I don't know what you would call the opposite of a sidekick. Yeah, the JLA, I guess is what you would call them. Anyway, so that's why Bruce Greenwood's on there. Young Justice is a great series that a friend of mine sort of forced me to watch, and I didn't regret it.
Nice.
Number five, Ben Affleck. Number four, Adam West. Number three, Christian Bale.
Swear to me.
Number two, the great Kevin Conroy, who is the voice of the animated Batman in so many different properties.
Even the bad ones.
Yes. And number one, Mr. Michael Keaton. All right, so Neil, you didn't have a challenge for me. You feel good about it?
No, I feel pretty good about your list. We differ a little bit, but I think it's not going to be too crazy.
All right, Neil, hit us with your list.
Okay, so I have eight because I didn't include Bruce Greenwood because I've never watched Young Justice, but my number eight is George Clooney. Number seven is Christian Bale, which I know might be controversial-ish.
Yeah. Swear to me. I challenge you to explain that to me.
See, the question for
Explain it to me. Okay, sorry.
Is, are you a good Batman? Are you a good Bruce Wayne? There are people much higher on my list that are good. Like, I think there are only a couple who have been a good both, and there are some who are really great Bruce Waynes, and there are some who are really, really great Batman. I think Christian Bale was average at both. Like, neither his Batman nor his Bruce Wayne was ever great.
I think his Bruce, when he's like pretending to be a playboy in that first in the first Batman,
When he burns down his house.
Yeah, Orlando, when he like shows up to the restaurant and he like pretends to be drunk and like fall, like they fall in a fountain. Like his challenge there is that he's acting against Katie Holmes, which I think is rough. And then even Maggie Gyllenhaal, like, that just wasn't good casting. So I don't think you ever gave him a good enough, like, other than, I mean, Alfred obviously is a great counter, but I don't think you gave him like a good romantic interest in those films. Unlike, I would even say like a Vicky Vale or a Selena Kyle, like Selena, I liked Anne Hathaway, Selena Kyle, but that was more Bat and Cat interacting than it was Selena and Bruce. So I think you're right that like he lacked some of the opportunities to show us Bruce. But I thought, I mean, his Batman was, you know, growly and muscly.
Yeah, but I think that out of those three movies, the most memorable thing from any of those three movies is not him. Like, it's not his performance as Batman or his performance as Bruce Wayne. It's like, it's either the just sort of the ambiance of the first movie, or Heath Ledger in the second movie, or Tom Hardy in the third movie, or even like Michael Caine as Alfred was amazing. And none of it was ever Christian Bale. So that's sort of why he ends up so low on my list, because it's like, he was okay.
Okay.
Will Arnett, number six. I think I just have a higher tolerance for Will Arnett by one spot. Val Kilmer, number five. I always really like Val Kilmer. I thought he was one of the best Bruce Waynes. His Batman, whatever.
Well, once again, like, he was acting opposite Nicole Kidman. Like, I think that really is crucial for Bruce Wayne that he's given, like, a good female.
Chase Meridian? Dr. Chase Meridian?
Yeah, Chase Meridian is a stupid name, but Nicole Kidman's good in that movie, man.
No, I love that movie because it's stupid.
I say, even if we can credit this to Nicole Kidman, it's still good. It's still good for Val Kilmer.
I agree with you.
Number four is Kevin Conroy out of Longevity. Although he gets knocked down a spot because the longevity has also bred such a weird variety of Batman that he's played good Batman in a couple of really bad movies. Number three, Adam West, because he was the first. And Adam West defined the zaniness of Batman that I think eventually inspired the Joel Schumacher movies to go out there. They just sort of failed when they got there, but also, you know, he is the bedrock upon which the House of Batman was built. Number two, Ben Affleck. I really like Affleck's Batman the most, I think. He's that physical, imposing, punishing, older, meaner Batman, I think, was at the very least the most unique take on Batman. You know, where Adam West is on one side of the spectrum, Affleck's Batman is sort of on the other side of the spectrum. And sure, he shoots a gun, which is whatever. Not great. Not great for Batman.
Not great, Bob.
But like that warehouse scene where he goes to get Martha, not his Martha, the other one. That was one of the best fight scenes I've seen in a Batman movie. And it was the moment where I decided that Zack Snyder really liked Batman better than any other character he's been directing for these last couple of years. And I think Affleck sort of pulled that off really well, and his stunt guy. So his stunt guy shares the award. And then, of course, number one, Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton is the best of both worlds. He's the only Batman, I think, that has been perfect as both Bruce Wayne and Batman. And when you think back to that first Batman movie, I remember Keaton's Batman as much as Jack's Joker, which I think is very important.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Dave.
All well justified. All right, coming in at the bottom of the list, number nine, George Clooney, just for lack of material to do anything.
Yeah, sorry, this is George when Clooney. We can reveal that we all had clones at the bottom.
Sorry, George.
Yeah.
It's okay. He's super handsome in real life. And
yeah.
It all works out.
He's kind of real life Batman.
He seems to also realize it was bad. It's fine.
Yeah.
Number eight, Ben Affleck. This could go up, but I honestly don't think I've seen enough. And what I have seen has been so stylized. It could be anyone to this one. I think he was really hampered with having to spend a lot of his climactic emotional scenes with a glowing piece of armor over his fucking face. But I think he's capable of it. Like Neil said, that big action scene in the warehouse shows promise, but not there yet. Not there yet for me. Number seven, Val Kilmer. mostly gets bonus points for like being a Bruce Wayne that is like barely there and hallucinates about a giant bat while having like very expressive bat lips while in the mask.
Yes.
And I feel like they accentuated something.
Younger Val Kilmer had good lips.
I think, you know, I've actually written articles about this. Well, one article, I think, up at Jabba.com about like how you need to have really good expressive lips to wear the cowl. And Kilmer is it. He is the lippiest.
He looks great in that cowl.
Keaton also actually is deceptively lippy, but Kilmer's got some good lips for sure.
Right. He also had nips.
Yep. Lips Cats and nips.
Number six, Will Arnett, who in the first act of Lego Batman is a pretty good Batman. Number five, the CW's Oliver Queen, since Batman cannot be on television. DC has figured out how to make the Green Arrow into Batman. Neil, if you like Bat Family, you should be watching Arrow. This is the Bat Family season.
I've watched quite a bit of Arrow. I have not watched enough of this season, I would agree. I do think it's funny, though. This is a short aside, I promise. I do think it's funny that is it a contractual thing where Batman can't be on TV, or is it just their resistance to take that character to a small screen? Because they think he's worth more.
I think they're resistant to take that character to a small screen.
I would bet.
There have been feints to other Batman-ish properties, but I don't think they're going to bring him in. I think that's...
Right, we've got Bruce Wayne on Fox. Season. We've got baby Bruce Wayne on Fox, but that's not the same as
I would be willing
Batman.
To bet that we eventually get there. That we eventually, within maybe the next 10 years...
Same thing like Smallville, like when it goes out, it's going to go out blazing, but when the CW universe decides to end, I'm hoping it's massive, infinite crisis tomfuckery that includes a Batman.
Mm-hmm. I just get a feeling that eventually Batman. I get a feeling that a lot of these major comic book properties will get into TV, which I think is more suited to their more serialized nature. Anyway, moving on.
Especially Batman, who could be smaller scale or bigger scale.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
It'd go really good, which is why I picked Oliver Queen for number five. It's basically
Batman
show.
CSI Gotham.
Yeah. Number four, Christian Bale. Like, I think that his strength actually is that he's a presence as neither thing in all three movies, because that's the Batman that I see most echoed back to me from my time reading Batman comics, is just sort of a blank slate symbol vengeance guy. And yeah, maybe Chris Nolan took it too far in that direction and didn't, you know, keep it all subtext, but... I didn't mind it. Little things about seeing him being able to do things in the suit, I think, that other Batmans haven't been able to do before.
Like turn his head?
Carried me through. Like turn his head, like being able to run with and bend at the waist at the same time. Those sort of things. It was just nice to see a versatile Batman that was, you know, trained out of the ninja background and sort of was able to make use of it. For the first time.
So the costume designer shares this one.
Oh, for sure. But like what I'm saying is that you could have gotten anybody to fill that, and Christian Bale fills it just perfectly. I don't think that a stronger Batman presence in something like The Dark Knight would necessarily help The Dark Knight's theme. But that's, you know, and how you take your coffee sort of thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Adam West, like Neil said, base of it all. I also think that he was able to translate what Batman actually was in pop culture to the television screen, and I think he should get a lot of credit for instantly getting why it would work, even though it didn't seem popular. And then to stick around the character enough, even as, you know, people who were fans of goofy Batman like me and didn't know it was goofy Batman, to then have him be like a cornerstone of Batman, I think is really interesting. And that's why you get things like Lego Batman, where Batman is also a children's property and will be for all time, because it's shown it can make money there. Number two, Kevin Conroy. I agree. He had some weird Batmans just because he's been doing it so long, but I give him so much credit for being the voice actor that walked into the first season of Batman, the animated series, and you could instantly tell whether he was Bruce Wayne or Batman if you had your eyes closed. That's no small feat. And therefore, number two, number one, Michael Keaton, just the best Batman, because I think my Bruce Wayne should be a little crazy, and my Batman should be a little crazy dark.
You want to go crazy? Let's go nuts.
nuts.
Yeah, I like that we all have the same number one, which is Keaton. And not just like for, I think, the reasons that Neil explained, but also probably timing, like how old we were when the Keaton Batman came out.
That's my theory.
Okay, then I agree with your theory. And then Clunes in last place for all of us is sort of like a little bat sandwich and, you know, various different fillings in the middle. If you guys disagree with our rankings vehemently or otherwise, please do let us know on Twitter at Storm of Spoilers, what we got wrong.
Just don't leave us an iTunes review based on your agreement with our rankings. That's not fair.
Well, you can. It has to be 5 stars.
Oh, that's right. 5 stars, and then put it wherever you want.
Say whatever you want.
Nice. All right. Cool. Next segment.
Yeah, let's do it. For this segment, we're going to be casting our ultimate Batman movie. It was a very vague prompt. We've all took it, I think, in very great, interesting directions.
Yeah, I misunderstood the prompt, so I sort of like slapdashed a little bit of this together and cheated a little bit in the process.
Which is why I think you should go first.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be great. So we're going to propose a Batman movie, a loose idea of what the plot would be, maybe a detailed idea, but I don't know. But we're going to cast this Batman movie with our favorite Bat characters, or then some fan casting. Here we go. Joanne.
Yeah, okay. The question I asked this morning when we talked about this was like, do we have to cast from existing actors? The answer was yes. Some of us did not follow those rules.
Oh, I didn't follow that rule at all.
I know. And not even Dave, who was the one who said yes, followed that rule quite a bit.
I broke for one.
Yeah, I broke for the same one. Seeing that you broke for that one, I broke for the same character. So because there isn't a good option for that character.
No, you got Chris O'Donnell or you got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, yeah. And they're not going to work in every Batman movie.
Yeah, so... So I also didn't understand that we were supposed to do a specific like comic plot line, but I came up with one. It's fine. It's fine. This is all fine. So this is all fine. It's fine. I'm not going to do a movie. I'm doing a limited series.
For breaking rules.
I know. Well, after I saw you guys break a rule, I decided to break a rule. I am going to do an 8-episode limited series. Of Death in the Family.
On Hulu.
Amazon.
Maybe it'd be Amazon.
I think either Hulu or Netflix.
I don't know. Marvel's on Netflix. So how wars work.
This is dreamcasting, not like... Okay, anyway.
All right, go ahead. Sorry.
So Death in the Family, which is about how the Joker sort of like kidnaps the Bat family, which are like Batman's famous allies, and sort of like holds them hostage. I've messed with it a little bit because I've added some rogues that I would like to see that aren't necessarily like the main rogues in that story. But I would cast Keaton as Batman, obviously. Batgirl Mae Whitman, that's not cheating. She's the voice of Batgirl on DC Superhero Girls, which is a YouTube series, so that counts. Mae Whitman, amazing. Would be an amazing Batgirl. It would be fantastic. If you've seen Scott Pilgrim, you know that she can wear black makeup around her eyes. Nightwing, JGL, Robin, this is where I'm breaking because as Dave intimated, there's no good option. So I'm going to pick Jacob Laughlin, who is one of the Mud Boys, not Ty Sheridan, the one who has been cast as Cyclops, but the other one. And he is like incapable of not doing his Southern accent. So he might just be like a Southern fried Robin, which I'm okay with. I need Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman because I just need that Keaton Pfeiffer magic back together again. Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon. Jeremy Irons as Alfred with a close run up Michael Goff, who was Alfred in sort of the Bat movies that we grew up with. Heath Ledger, obviously, as Joker. Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. Frank Gorshin, who is the Riddler from the 60s Batman. Showrunner Steven DeKnight, who did the first season of Daredevil. And my vision for this is because we need to know that the Bat family is important to this Batman in order to feel the peril of them being kidnapped. We're going to do a Lost style thing where each episode we sort of like cut between flashbacks of like Batman, doing an adventure with this sidekick and the main plot that's going on. So you build that tension and that relationship while you have this very famous, the Joker and Catwoman and the Riddler fucking with Batman by holding his family hostage. So
interesting,
right?
That's a good one.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Give me my deal, Hulu. All right. Next.
Neil. All
right, cool. So mine is a Batman movie without Batman, which I literally just broke all the rules here. But it is a Nightwing movie, which is way more relevant now than when I wrote this. And it's based on sort of the RIP Batman and Battle for the Cowl era of Nightwing, which is about Dick Grayson comes back to Gotham. He was in New York, I think, and finds that someone has been impersonating Batman, which is turns out to be Jason Todd. So it's all about this struggle between Nightwing and this impersonator Batman. And I think Nightwing gets tossed into Arkham Asylum. So I was thinking it could be like this psychological thriller. And I would enlist Jeremy Saulnier, who did Green Room and Blue Ruin, these really hyper-violent, like, because for me, it's this Nightwing movie is like a psychological thriller that becomes extremely violent at the end. It would be the R-rated Batman movie. And I would cast it as such. For Nightwing, I would cast Harry Lloyd, who played Viserys on Game of Thrones.
I love Harry Lloyd.
He
I
would
love
be
that
good.
Casting.
He would be good, really good. As sort of going crazy, Dick Grayson.
Yes.
For Jason Todd, the bravado of impersonating Batman, thinking that you could do and sort of being a screw-up, I would take Armie Hammer, because I think dude's got a lot of range.
Good. Very good.
And also almost historically Batman.
Almost Batman, so yes.
Finally get
right.
to do that.
Right, yeah.
I would throw Barbara Gordon in there. She's not really prominent in the comic books that I was referencing, but we're putting her in there anyway because I want Mackenzie Davis to play Barbara
Love
Gordon.
It. Love it.
For my one person that actually comes back from Batman.
Which Neil added after I had my scolding
which I was
rant.
Literally adding while Joanna was reading hers off, is Michael Caine as Alfred, because I think it'd be very interesting to see like what happened to Alfred after Batman dies, essentially, and how he interacts with these two young men who were under the wing of Bruce Wayne, Jason Todd and Dick Grayson. You would take Macon Blair, who's been in all Jeremy Saulnier's movies, and make him Jeremiah Arkham, who is like the head of Arkham. And then you would bring in Hugh Jackman as Hugo Strange and have him sort of somehow complicate this whole thing. I just think every time I see a Hugo Strange comic, I think, oh man, Hugh Jackman's almost old enough for that.
So it'd be a, he's getting there.
Yeah, it would be a very violent, R-rated, sort of claustrophobic thriller Nightwing. So
I love it.
I will take my movie check now.
I love it.
All right,
nice.
All right, Dave,
we're good at this, guys.
We are so
good.
Yeah,
we are really good at this. All right, so I'm going to adapt Dark Victory, which is the Loeb & Sayles sequel to The Long Halloween, which sort of became The Dark Knight. But my movie is going to be hyper-stylized, and it is about old Batman, old Gordon, and old Two-Face realizing that they've sort of become world-weary of this crime-ridden Gotham. And, like in the Dark Victory story, the outlet to Bruce Wayne's actual humanity is a Robin he discovers. He adapts Robin in this story. So it takes place out of continuity, but depends on all of these people playing like world-weary versions of their character that we've seen before. Here we go. Ben Affleck is going to come and show me that he could play a good old Batman by being in this movie. Gary Oldman's going to pick up his Gordon. Richard Mole, who played the voice of Two-Face on the animated series,
AKA Bull Shannon from Night Court. Yes.
Exactly. Would not be 74 years old, but would be in his prime and be playing Two-Face.
I love it.
Catwoman would be Michelle Pfeiffer. The Joker, who just flits in and out of the story to cause some problems, would be a Jack Nicholson reprisal, because you don't need him to be dark and take over the thing. You just need him to be Joker for a little while. Riddler, similarly, sort of in and out, is Frank Gorshin. Robin, I would say, would be Moonlight's Ashton Sanders.
See, this is
because just make a black Robin.
This is the best casting in the entire list. When I saw your casting of Ashton Sanders, I was so jealous I almost put it on mine. And I was like, no, Joanna, you're not allowed to do that. That would be so mean. But it's so good. Now all I want is Ashton Sanders to be Nightwing.
So in Dark Victory, he's like sort of doesn't become Robin till the end. He's sort of helping with some detective work earlier on. They're trying to find this villain called the Hangman, who's trying to frame Two-Face. I can't spoil who I'd cast the Hangman for because of it would spoil Dark Victory. But I will say that I want some action that is also partially stylized. So I picked Jennifer Yu. Director of Kung Fu Panda 2, and saying she should move over from animation, like the director of Lego Batman, into a live-action Batman movie. Just do that. You know how to storyboard things. Kung Fu Panda 2 has great use of color and shape and form of fighting. Just make it Batman. Old Batman.
Nice. I like all of these. Can we just get all of these in production instead of whatever Zack Snyder's working on?
Yeah, just stop Justice League 2 or whatever it's going to be, and that's just all three of these. We got one for Hulu, we got an R-rated one, we've got one that sort of depends on other continuity.
Because you know they're going to want to make an R-rated one after Logan is successful.
Oh, for sure. Hey, that sounds like a transition.
Whoa! Yeah!
Neil.
That's crazy.
What are we talking about next week?
Next week we got a big episode, Logan and the X-Men. We're going to be talking more Legion, which you will be able to see a lot more Legion by the time we talk next week. And we're going to talk Logan, which we've all seen, which is pretty great. And other X-Men things, sort of like we did this week. There's a lot of X-Men news floating around, and we're going to make Dave tell us all about it.
We're going to talk some Legion, which people have been asking us to do.
Yes,
so.
Yes, very exciting. Yep. Cool. Yeah, that's what we got on tab next week. Should be fun.
Yep, I think I came home from a Logan screening and caught up on an episode of Legion, and Java was like, "Why are you smiling?" And I'm like, "It's good time to be X-Men fan again."
Right? Yeah.
It's been a while.
Fox has their ducks in a row. All right.
So welcome back, guys. Until we could reunite as a team of mutants, let's take a moment to tell people where they could find our Batman personas this week, Mr. Neil Miller.
You can find me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me at Rejects. Also, if you're watching the Oscars this week, I'll be live tweeting it on the Film School Rejects at Reject Nation account. Two more things. Don't forget to take our survey, wondery.com/survey, and don't forget to subscribe to my new podcast project at One Perfect Pod.
And Joanna Robinson.
You find me at Joe Wrote This on Twitter. You can listen to me talk about the Oscars and Little Gold Men or on VanityFair.com. Or you can listen to our podcast, Gen Pop, where this week, consistent with the theme, Richard Roper will be on to talk about the biggest Oscar snubs in all of all time.
Ooh. Of Ebert and Roper fame.
Of Ebert and Roper fame.
Listen, kids, we used to only get our movie criticism from newspapers and television shows, and they were primetime television shows. You have no idea what that was like. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA70. You can find my podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com. Why isn't the X-Men animated theme the theme for all X-Men properties? Let's find out next week.